This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Well, after the international break, it's a warm welcome back to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. And Mark, it's that crucial stage of the season. We've got the internationals out of the way now. We can look forward to the run into the end of the campaign. Before we look, though, at what's happening in terms of the Premier League and elsewhere later this week, we have had the Euro qualifiers. And firstly, a perfect start for England, exactly what Gareth Southgate would have wanted.
Yeah, it would. And, you know, Warren, I think that's what Jackie, he's away, isn't he, this week? He's playing golf in Orlando and going to watch the LIV golf, and he's left us to it. But it's a thrilling sort of time to, you know, April, absolutely crazy, really, in terms of the fixture list. So I'm looking forward to it. But yeah, in terms of England, as good as it could get, really, I know that some people were not happy with England's second half performance against Italy in Naples, but I just take the game as a whole. You know, you're playing the European champions away from home, and to dominate the first half the way that they did, I thought was absolutely fantastic. You know, Kane, Bellingham, Saka were the three standout players, and then Grealish knocked in that easy chance. Dion Dublin called it a really difficult one. I mean, it definitely might have been for him. I mean, I know he was better with his head than he was with his feet, but looked like a tap-in to me. That should have been 3-0. I mean, it would have been even better. Yeah, they had to hold on in the second half, but, you know, you're away to Italy. They are going to have spells where they're on top. And then Ukraine, that had the potential to be a tricky match as well. Mm. You don't just sort of stroll in and just beat these teams easily. Look at the problems France had dealing with Ireland on Monday night, you know. So the fact that it was trouble-free against Ukraine, I think just adds to this growing maturity of the England team. You would like, I suppose, to see sort of a centre-back emerge, whether that's Maguire playing every week you know, to be alongside Stones. But I look at that midfield with Rice and Bellingham, the wing option, particularly with Saka and when Rashford's fit again, and then Kane up front. I mean, it's pretty strong. There can't be... I don't see a better team in Europe at the moment than England. They still need to, of course, prove it come the European Championships, but a great start.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. I would say, though, that the result of the international break has to be given to Scotland, who stunned Spain at Hampden Park by 2-0. Rodri wasn't particularly happy with the Scotland performance, but we have to say it was very, very impressive from Steve Clarke's men.
Yeah, I mean, what was Rodri expecting them to sort of play like sort of peak Pep Barcelona? I mean, it's not going to happen, is it? You have to do what you need to do to win the game. They, of course, made the most of that Pedro Porro mistake, set them up nicely for the match. Yeah, you're absolutely right. A great result. And I tell you what was also eye-catching was the way that they beat Cyprus, because when it was 1-0 against Cyprus, I think the Scotland of old, you know, concede a last gasp equaliser there, and, you know, it ends up ruining qualification. It didn't, and then they built on that to put themselves in a great position in the group. You know, Steve Clarke's got his new contract, the team's going along very well, and when you actually look at that team now on paper, you do see a lot of Premier League regulars or players of a, you know, high standard, certainly more than in sort of previous campaigns. So there is definitely a bright future, I think, at the moment for Scotland, albeit maybe not playing the type of football that Rodri wants them to. As far as Spain are concerned, De La Fuente, the new coach, he wouldn't be that well known in Europe. And that doesn't mean you can't be a great coach, but I think he's seen as very much a federation man, somebody that's come through the youth ranks, I suppose similar in some regards to Gareth Southgate in terms of, and you can get that continuity at international level that can work for you, but he made way too many changes, completely underestimated Scotland, and they got absolutely what they deserved, which was nothing. And they I thought were very lucky to beat Norway 3-0 in the opening game, because Sørloth missed an amazing opportunity when it was only 1-0, one that you would have imagined Haaland would have taken had he been fit. And Odegaard, I felt, was absolutely fouled and should have been a penalty awarded. So, you know, while England are going well, one of what you would assume would be one of their rivals, you know, for the European Championship next summer, looking a really bad spot at the moment.
They do indeed, and there'll be plenty more talk, of course, about the Euros as we get nearer the actual tournament itself next summer. But we're going to return to Premier League matters now, because despite the fact that England and Scotland were tearing it up on the pitch, the biggest story over the international break, really, was the departure of Antonio Conte. Before we look at the prices in terms of Tottenham's next permanent manager, Mark, I suppose it wasn't the biggest surprise to see him go following that rant after the Southampton game before the international break.
No, he did well to last another week, didn't he? And I think there was a suggestion at one stage that maybe Daniel Levy wanted to punish him even further by making him take a couple of days training. And, you know, the writing was on the wall, obviously, after that press conference. He then didn't come back when it was first thought that he would do for training, you know, during the middle of the international break. So he's wanted out for a long time, Warren. There's no doubt in my mind that his heart has just not been in it in the last few months. And he's somebody that, you know, he coaches with a passion. And when that passion's not there, and he's just ranting and raving at the players. I mean, if that's what he said to them in public, you can imagine what it was like behind closed doors at times there. The relationship had clearly broken down between, the squad and the manager. Just found it really interesting that he's sort of trusted lieutenant Stellini has been given the task of seeing the job through until the end of the season. He hasn't done badly when he was filling in for Conte when he was ill. It was just that you imagined that the two of them were so close that it would be difficult for the squad maybe to trust Conte's number two, but it doesn't appear to be the case. In the No Tottenham journalists saying he's got a great relationship with the squad. They feel much freer when sort of Conte's not around. So we'll have to see how that works out. I don't expect him to get the job permanently. I think he's about 25-1, but was a huge surprise because I noticed he wasn't even in the betting with some bookmakers to take over for the rest of the season. And one bookmaker had him at 33-1 just a couple of days before he was appointed. So I don't think anybody saw that coming. I think it's better than Ryan Mason doing it. I mean, I would have, as a Spurs fan, I would have been fearful of what the last 10 games would have held had, you know, Mason been given that real hospital pass.
So we think Stellini is a no-go in terms of a permanent manager's role. There's a number of big names, as ever, Mark, being mentioned as potentially being the Spurs boss on the first day of next season. Julian Nagelsmann in particular seems to be the name that's being touted around at the moment. Are we expecting that that might be the case?
Yeah, I mean, I think he probably is the favourite, 13-8 with bookmakers from 2-1. So clearly that there has been some interest in him. I suppose the problem for Tottenham is that it sounds like Real Madrid, Paris Saint-Germain are two that could definitely be on the hunt for a new coach in the summer as well. And that might determine where the second choice, if he is the second choice, or whether it's closer between Nagelsmann and Pochettino, where they both end up. I would expect it to be one of those two people there that are at the front. And I think I can't think of a Spurs fan that wouldn't be happy if one of those two, managed to get it. Some will be, you know, wanting the clean break with Pochettino. Others will want that emotional tie to the former coach. I personally, they're different managers, but I think that they're both capable of doing a very good job. Next in the list, Luis Enrique. He was on Spanish radio on Wednesday night saying he wants his next job to be in the Premier League. So he was supposed to be the first choice of Fabio Paratici, the sporting director. But of course, the sporting director has just been banned from football operations by FIFA. I would, I'm speaking here as a Spurs fan, I wouldn't want Enrique to be the next Tottenham manager. I think he's just been out of club football too long. Stylistically, I like what that Spanish national team did, even though the results weren't amazing and they went out of the World Cup early, wasn't it? It was penalties that did them in both of the tournaments. But when he had success at Barcelona, he had Neymar, Suarez and Messi up front. It's a completely different job. If it's not to be one of those front two, I'd like it to be De Zerbi, who's 8-1, or Amorim at Sporting at 14. Years. We get obsessed with, you know, it's guy, you've got to have this big name, it's got to be this, it's got to be that. I disagree. I think that there are a lot of good coaches out there, and maybe Tottenham need to take a step back from this win-at-all-cost mentality that has actually cost them more than it's gained them over the last few years.
Well, let's turn our attentions now to the weekend's action. It doesn't happen very often, Mark, that the biggest match of the weekend in terms of the Premier League is the first one up, and it is Manchester City against Liverpool at the Etihad Stadium. A 12:30 start for the two teams that have battled it out for the title over the last 5 or 6 years. Manchester City 4-7, Liverpool 9-2, and the draw 7-2. It is a huge game, potentially not as big as ones in the last few seasons, Mark, with both of them going for the title. But City will see this as a must win.
I think it is must win. We're at that stage now, aren't we? Like I say, we're heading into April. You do start to get these must win matches, and I think this is for City because if they don't, I don't think they'll peg Arsenal. I'm not sure they'll peg Arsenal back anyway. If they don't win this game, I think it might be gone for them. I mean, maybe I'm being overly dramatic there because they still will have a chance, of course, but it's a huge blow. It would be a monster blow to them if they don't manage to win this game. I sort of went down the Paul Merson route for a little while there of, it's all over if they don't. And of course it's not. But I think those connected with City will feel like if they don't win this game, they are in a terrible spot really to take the title. Again, you're right, I suppose, to say that because it's not them two going head to head for the title, it's maybe not as big as it has been. But in terms of Liverpool for the top four, they've got some massive games coming up, haven't they? Chelsea away on the horizon as well after this trip to the Etihad. If they could get, say, 4 points from them games, they'll really fancy their chances of being in the Champions League. If they sort of lost both games, it's going to be looking really sticky again, isn't it, for them to get into the top four. So I think it is a monster match and probably in the worst possible kickoff time, isn't it, for such a big game. The 12:31 after the international break. I know they've moved the international break now and it's all done by Tuesday so you can get back to your club. So it's not quite as bad as what it was in years gone past. Still not ideal. He's still only getting a couple of days to be working so closely with your team ahead of, I think it's the biggest game of the season. Obviously, when City play Arsenal, that will then become the biggest game. But before that, I think this is the biggest game of the season. And if City do win, Arsenal maybe don't go into that Leeds game at 3 o'clock in quite as buoyant mood.
It is, and like you say, a big week for Liverpool as well. 8 days, Manchester City away, Chelsea away, and then Arsenal at home next Sunday as well. So it is going to be a big period of time for Jurgen Klopp as well as for Pep Guardiola. Just one question mark, though, at the moment, which is looming large, Mark, over this game as well. Will Erling Haaland be fit, having pulled out of the Norway internationals? Do you see it being a massive hindrance to City if he doesn't play? It's, people are still of the opinion that maybe, as many goals as he has scored this season, they could maybe more fluid without him.
Yeah, I don't think it would be. Psychologically, I think it would be a blow because he feels like he's, this absolute beast, isn't he, up front, and he's unstoppable. And I just think that when he doesn't play, I'm not saying City are better or they're worse. That conversation's, I think, much more complicated than that. But they've got solutions that if Haaland doesn't play, Julian Alvarez, for instance, has won a World Cup playing up front for Argentina, would offer a different threat to what Haaland does. They could play a false nine, and then they could dominate midfield against Liverpool, and sort of get back to almost the way that they were when I felt that they were playing their best football, when they didn't even have anybody really sort of in that striker zone. And you would question Phil Foden has been in good form, but again, even if he's not fit, it's Mahrez, isn't it? It's Grealish. I tend not to get too hung up really in terms of Manchester City when they've got the odd player missing. So yes, it will have an impact on the prices if he's not there, Haaland. I think there might be some question marks in Norway if he does suddenly rock up and looks 100% fit. But you have to take it on trust. I mean, he's always been, I think he's somebody that's shown up for Norway in the past. So I would be surprised if this was some kind of smokescreen. So a problem for City, but not one that I think will determine whether they win or lose the game.
So we've taken a look at the bigger picture for the whole of the big clash at the Etihad on Saturday. Mark, what's your best bet for this game?
I just think that Man City are too short with or without Haaland here. 4-7 wouldn't be a bet that I'd be looking to take. You know, they're not playing as well as what they were sort of, you know, when they were racking up 100 points. So I'm going to go for Liverpool or draw, double chance. Liverpool are a team that have done very well against Manchester City in terms of being able to score against them. They've scored, I mean, I'm not including the charity or the community shield as it is now. I'm not including that. They've scored 10 goals in their last five games against City. So if you're taking 4-7, you know, you bet hope that City are scoring at least two and maybe even three goals. And I just don't, I just think at the prices, I know Liverpool have got problems at the back. I think we've all seen those issues, you know, throughout the season. But I'd still take them to call City problems. And therefore, I think there are better spots to back a team at 4-7 than what there are Man City against Liverpool.
Well, that's the big game of the weekend. Up next, we'll talk about the rest of the Premier League fixtures. So let's start off then with the games at 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, starting with the league leaders Arsenal, and a big game at both ends of the table with Leeds battling for their lives. How do you see this one going, Mark?
I'm going to go for Arsenal and over 2.5 goals. You know, I think if City don't win, the atmosphere at the Emirates will be incredible for that game. And I think that the way that Arsenal are playing, I can see them sort of beating Leeds, and it might be in a higher scoring game. I know everybody seems to think that Javi Gracia has really tightened Leeds up defensively, but the expected goals against in their matches have actually been really high against Chelsea. It was 1.5 and it was 2.7 against both Brighton and Wolves. So I'm not sure that Leeds are defending that much better, even though maybe the stats would say that they are, just from a purely scoring point of view. But with Rodrigo back as well, they've got a threat in, and Arsenal are not keeping at the Emirates, not keeping too many clean sheets. So Arsenal and over 2.5 goals. If you wanted to really pump the price up, you could go for Arsenal and both teams to score. But I prefer the first option in case the Gunners steamroll on them.
Well, two teams who were promoted to the Premier League last season have had contrasting fortunes this time around. Not sure many people would have thought there'd be 15 points separating Bournemouth and Fulham ahead of their clash at the Vitality Stadium, Mark, but certainly Fulham have been the more impressive of the two teams.
They have. I think Bournemouth's problem was that they didn't do enough business in the summer, but since they've signed new players in January, they look much stronger than they were in the first part of the season. That's why I'm going for them, draw no bet in this game. Mitrovic and William both suspended for Fulham after the incident in Old Trafford in the FA Cup. Those two, 17 goal contributions between them in the Premier League this season. So you're taking a lot out of that Fulham team, with such classy players absent. And Bournemouth, for all of their struggles in recent home games, they have beaten Liverpool and they've drawn with Newcastle. So this is a step down in class and one that they might be able to take advantage of. And they certainly need to. It's really tight down at the bottom.
Well, as not many people would have suggested, Brighton versus Brentford at the start of the season would be a battle to try and qualify for Europe. But both of these two teams have been outstanding at spells this season. How do you see this one going, Mark?
I think that Brighton are fair enough here as the odds-on favourites. Brentford, only one defeat in 15, so you have to respect that form. But I just see Brighton as legitimate top four candidates. Every time I watch them, they look to me, if you just take away the fact that they're called Brighton and just look at the football, I see no reason why they can't challenge Tottenham, Liverpool, Newcastle for this full spot. They've got a tough sort of schedule, so maybe that'll catch up with them. But this, to me, would be the type of game they need to win if they're to stay in that conversation. I think they can do so.
A big game at the bottom end of the table between Crystal Palace and Leicester at Selhurst Park. It sees the return to management, of course, of Roy Hodgson following Patrick Vieira's sacking. Will there be a change of fortunes for the Eagles?
I'm going to go for the draw. In terms of whether I think there'll be a change, there might be. But if it is, I see it as because the fixture list has just got a lot easier for Palace now. I mean, Vieira's like last couple of months, they were just playing top team after top team. And I'm not saying he sort of deserve loads more time, but I don't see Hodgson being any different. It felt to me like they needed more creativity in the final third and sort of inspiration attacking wise. And, you know, Hodgson's got strengths. That's not one of them. So I expect more of the same from Palace. I think they're going to just try and grind their way to survival, and they might just do it. But In terms of Leicester, I wanted to be with Leicester in this game. They've got the superior firepower, but they have only got 1 point from the last 18 available. And, you know, they're very much in this relegation battle as well. So it might be a result where they both think a draw is not a terrible result.
And the fifth 3 o'clock kickoff on Saturday is another massive one at the bottom end of the table. Nottingham Forest against Wolves. Forest just beset by injuries over recent weeks, and that's seen them slide down the table, Mark, and they'll be really looking over the shoulder now.
Yeah, I mean, you can't copy and paste in audio, can you? But I feel like just doing the same thing for this Palace v Leicester match. The draw, again, is the one that stands out to me. So many big games, really, at the bottom of the table this weekend. There's a big feature in the Racing Post assist supplement on Friday, and we'll also be on racingpost.com just with Dan Charles, who will be on the show later on, just going through it and picking out the teams he thinks are the best value to be relegated, and also a piece from Kevin Pauline sort of analysing all the teams down at the bottom, what they do well and what they do badly. I think you're right about Forest in terms of the injuries. No win in six now in the Premier League, and slowly being dragged back into it without necessarily people talking about them as being bang in trouble. But when I saw them in that game against Tottenham recently, they were awful. You could say, you know, he's probably the worst team that have been to Spurs, certainly this season. I know they're better at home, but I don't think you can always rely just solely on your home form, because eventually I just see that, you know, potentially slipping away, and you end up, your away form becomes your home form, and you just start losing games home and away. Wolves, from their point of view, it's only one win in six for them, and they've had some really bad results, you know, lost at home to Bournemouth and Leeds. So they're right in it as well under Lopetegui. You initially thought had made a good impression. I still think that of the two, I would fancy Wolves to stay up more than I would Nottingham Forest. This might be a game, though, where, again, the fear of losing becomes so important here. So the draw, I think, is a big runner in this one as well.
Well, Saturday's 5:30 game in the Premier League sees two teams who are, I'm tempted to say, marooned in the middle of the table at the moment, Chelsea and Aston Villa, who are seemingly, Mark, moving in the right direction, looking at recent results. 10th and 11th in the table. The concern for Chelsea in particular will be a Villa win. We'll see them leapfrog them in the table.
Yeah, I think you could argue that these are about the only two teams really with nothing to play for in terms of the Premier League anyway, for the rest of the season. I just think Chelsea just look too short to me. So I'm going to go for Aston Villa or draw, double chance. Chelsea have won four of their last 15 matches and couldn't even see it, see it home against Everton at Stamford Bridge in, you know, it's a very late equaliser, wasn't it, from the Toffees. And so, do you want to be taking short prices about a team that just wins as infrequently as what Chelsea do? Not for me. Under Unai Emery, Villa are tracking at the same kind of points return as Liverpool, Newcastle and Tottenham since he arrived at the club. So I'm not saying that they're suddenly going to become a Champions League contender next season, but they're playing, I think, better than the league table would suggest. You know, I'd said it before on Betts Club many times. I thought that Steven Gerrard was probably getting probably doing the worst job in the Premier League at the time he was sacked. I felt like there was a lot of talent in the Villa team that just wasn't being put together properly. And we're starting to see shoots of recovery from Villa for sure. So, yeah, I'll go for them to avoid defeat.
Feels like Groundhog Day as I move into Sunday's fixtures about games at the bottom end of the table, because two teams in the relegation zone meet at the London Stadium at 2 o'clock. West Ham against Southampton. This could be huge as well, Mark.
Yeah, it really is. I'm going to go for a West Ham win in this one. If you look at the games they've played against teams 13th downwards in the Premier League, they've won four of those five at home. So it looks very much to me like David Moyes is targeting certain games as absolute must win. I know that can be quite dangerous. What happens if you lose those games or don't win them? But it does feel to me like there's a focus. You see the way they beat Everton and Nottingham Forest. Really similar games, similar moments, weren't they, really? In that Moyes was under pressure and they were able to get the job done. And I think they'll do so again against the Southampton team. I still can't quite work them out as to whether they are as bad as the league table suggests or not. But I think I don't see West Ham as getting relegated, and I think this is a key game for them in terms of staying up.
I'm with you with Southampton. I watched them 1 week beat Chelsea and then next week lose at Leeds, and it was almost like two completely different teams, even though it was an unchanged side. In terms of battling for the Champions League, Sunday at 4:30, Newcastle against Manchester United is probably as big as it gets at the moment. Now, Newcastle look like they've completely lost their form in and around that EFL Cup final, but they've got back-to-back wins now. And in contrast, Manchester United have drawn and lost their last two in the league. Could it be that we see Newcastle go level on points with them?
I'm not so sure. I'm going to go for a Manchester United win, actually, in this game. It just caught my eye that they're the underdogs. And I know Casemiro is an obvious blow, but you mentioned sort of United, Manchester United's bad form, if you like, inverted commas, sort of heading into the international break. They weren't very good when they beat Fulham in the FA Cup either. I just felt they were knackered. They'd just been playing constantly because they'd reached the EFL Cup final and they're still going strong in the Europa League. It was just too many games for them. And the international break came at the perfect time for them. This is not really an anti-Newcastle selection in any way. They are right in that mix for a Champions League spot. It was just Manchester United being underdogs. I just thought that was more interesting to bet than sort of Newcastle being favourites.
It'll probably be built on Monday as two teams in a bit of turmoil at the moment as Everton take on Tottenham. But you look at recent form, Everton unbeaten in three, Spurs with one defeat in five in the league as well. Which way is this going to go at Goodison Park, Mark?
Yeah, a tough one to call. I've said it before on Bets Club that I've sort of wanted to oppose Tottenham. The problem with doing that is that the market is against them anyway. So it becomes quite difficult to find value in betting against Tottenham. They're had their problems away from home. You know, beat Southampton, were thrashed at Leicester, weren't they? Knocked out of the cup. Both cups, really, because they lost 1-0 in Milan and then to Sheffield United. They lost to Wolves as well. The only thing I would say about some of them games is that they probably should have been out of sight against Wolves, and the penalty against Southampton. Not for me. I'll just file it under that one. I was going to go for under 2.5 goals in this game. Everton, it's no surprise how they're playing under Sean Dyche. They've had 3-1-0 wins already under him and a 2-0 defeat in the four games at Goodison. I just think it will follow a similar pattern. Not sure if they'll win or if they'll lose, but I'm more confident that there'll be a nil for one of the teams and probably only a one going the other way. So, yeah, under 2.5 goals.
Well, that's all the info and tips that you need for the Premier League action this weekend. Up next, Dan Childs will deliver his best EFL bets for the weekend.
And now we're joined by my Racing Post colleague, Dan Charles, to talk all things EFL. Charlesy, we're back with a full slate after, just League One and Two in action. I'm not going to mention Sheffield Wednesday. They're my outright selection in League One and they're bottling, choking. I don't even want to sort of look at that at the moment. But how many bets have you got for us this week?
I've got three bets, including opposing Sheffield Wednesday. No, I'm not opposing Sheffield Wednesday against Lincoln. But now I'm going to start off with a South Wales derby in the Championship, Cardiff against Swansea. Often it's a game that you kind of might want to avoid for betting purposes, but I actually think Cardiff are quite a good price. You know, 29-20 at the moment, nearly 6-4 at home to Swansea. They've improved under Sabri Lamouchi since he's gone in there. Towards the end of January, they do need the points. They're only 3 points above the relegation zone, Cardiff, but they are picking up. They've got 7 points from the last three home games. Should have probably had an away win last time out as well. They were 1-0 up away to Rotherham, deservedly so, in a massive game. And then the heavens opened early in the second half there and that game got abandoned. But that was a bit of a blow for them. But they are playing well. And I just think that, you know, this is quite a good game for them as well, given that they're on such a good run of home form. Swansea are they were kind of expected to push for promotion this season. It's not really happened for them. The manager there, Russell Martin, he's not really been helped in the transfer market. Didn't make any signings in January. And they've kind of fallen from, you know, sort of the fringes of the playoffs, and now they're down to 16th place. Going to stay up, but having a really tough time, especially away from home. They've lost the last four away games. I think away from home, their style that they play, where it's very, very possession-based, they get pressurised a lot away from home, and teams, you know, nick the ball off from high up the pitch and counter on them. And you can imagine that happening in a derby game where the crowd are going to be, you know, really on the case. So, no, I think Cardiff playing well at the moment and overpriced to win this one.
I like the way you've waited until Jack Reed is safely in the United States of America before you slag off his good pal, Russell Martin. So we've got Cardiff down as one. What's next best?
Yeah, going to in League One now, going to drop to a mid-table clash, Fleetwood at home to Exeter. And I fancy Exeter to get the points here. On the draw, no bet, they're just a shade of odds on. I think Gary Caldwell, Exeter, is doing a really, really good job, and wouldn't be surprised, looking further ahead, for them to be surprise challengers in the promotion race next season. They play some really good football. He's kind of changed their style since taking over from Matt Taylor, and they're very possession based now, but it's possession with a purpose. They've won their last two games. They hammered Accrington 5-0 last Saturday, and then a much tougher game at home to Barnsley on Tuesday, and they sort of carved out a gritty 3-1 home win. They can win in different ways, and they've got a really strong team offensively. Jay Stansfield's doing the business for them up front. They've coped really well without Giovanni Brown, who's been suspended for the last couple of months as he's sort of facing a court case. And they're going incredibly well. And I look at them away to Fleetwood, who are similarly sort of mid-table team that are on a decent run. They won their last two games, but the last of those was a narrow 2-1 win at home to Lincoln, who were really injury hit last weekend. They kind of just scraped over the line there. I think Exeter at home is a much tougher game, and I'll take Exeter to win it.
Exeter, after the Fleetwood game, their next five matches, they play Bolton, Peterborough, Plymouth, Derby, Sheffield Wednesday. Actually, if you do six, it becomes Bolton, Peterborough, Plymouth, Derby, Sheffield Wednesday, and Ipswich. So they're going to have a massive say in
the. What they could do a lot of damage as well, because yeah. You know, where a lot of people look at mid-table teams as the teams to face, Exeter are playing almost as well as anyone in the division at the moment. So yeah, they could very
got
interesting.
A big say. They're going to have a big say in title automatic and who makes the playoffs, and then also potentially put down a marker, like you say, for next season. So we've got Cardiff and we've got Exeter. How are we filling up the?
Going to drop down now to League Two and Sutton playoff chasing Sutton. On the draw, no bet, away to mid-table Walsall. Fancy Sutton here on the draw, no bet, evens. I think it's a really good price. Sutton had a sort of an injury crisis early in the season and were sort of in towards the bottom part of the table. But they've since getting their players back, they've done really, really well. And they're now sort of on the fringes of the playoffs in ninth place. They have had a little wobble recently, to only 2 points from the last three. But this trip to Walsall looks a really good game for them to get back on track. I mean, Walsall have had one win in the last 16 games. And they lost, I thought the 2-0 defeat at Wimbledon on Tuesday was a real bad one, because Wimbledon went into that game with no winning 11 and they had eight senior players missing. So it was an even game. But to lose that game 2-0 for Walsall is a sign of where Walsall are at the moment. And I think they're a team, you know, sort of like crying out to be opposed. And Sutton, who are unbeaten in five away games, and as I say, going really well second half of the season, they look a really good bet to me on the draw, no bet.
Okay, brilliant. Thanks very much, Dan.
You're welcome.
So we've gone through the EFL and the Premier League for you on the Mark Langdon Bets Club this week. And Mark, it's time to pick out your selections for this weekend, starting with the player prop shop.
Yes, we're going to go for James Maddison to have a shot on target at 5-6. He's had a shot on target in five of his last seven Premier League games. And his shot volume tends to be good. Even before that run that I was mentioning where he had a shot on target in five of his last seven, the game before that, he had eight shots against Everton, all of them off target, unfortunately. But, you know, generally speaking, shot volume is where it needs to be. And I also think the way that Crystal Palace play or will play under Roy Hodgson, defend deep, you know, don't allow space in behind, that will offer the opportunity for the likes of Maddison to have, you know, digs from around about the edge of the area.
And you'd think as well that Maddison would be full of confidence after his England performance as well during the international break. What about the long shot this week, Mark? Where are we looking with this?
Yes, I'm going to League One. Huge game. I don't know how many times we've mentioned how many huge games there are this weekend, but it's Derby against Ipswich. And I just felt at 11-10, Ipswich were just too short to win this game at Pride Park. They've won six in a row, the Tractor Boys, but if you have a look at the opponents there, NK Dons, Burton, Accrington, Bolton, Shrewsbury, they'd expect a bit, with the exception of Bolton, you'd expect to be winning those games anyway, I would have thought, if you're Ipswich. So this is still a tough test against a Derby team that's hit a flat spot, but before that flat spot, they were on a massive winning run. And, you know, it wouldn't be a huge surprise to me, certainly less of a surprise than the odds would suggest if Derby kind of bounced back here in, you know, what is a big game in terms of automatic title, playoffs. You know, it's all on the line really here.
It is indeed. What about the treble, which won last time out, Mark, as well? Can we follow that up with another victory?
Let's hope so. So Bayern Munich to beat Borussia Dortmund. I mean, I just look at the way Dortmund lost at Chelsea and just think that when they're upped in class away from home, just struggle, really. And then I look at Bayern Munich, Thomas Tuchel's first game in charge. They're certainly not going to be any worse for having Tuchel replacing Julian Nagelsmann. And again, they're the team Bayern, when it matters, I just back them to turn up. You know, won all six of their Champions League group stage games, despite being in a section with Inter and Barcelona, then beat PSG home and away. And I think they sometimes get a bit bored of like mundane Bundesliga games. So a game against Dortmund should be what they're looking for. I've already mentioned the fancy West Ham to beat Southampton, so I'm going to go for them. And then finally on Sunday night, Napoli to beat Milan. It's 23 points between these two teams. Napoli are at home and they're 4-5. And I just think the difference between the sides is much bigger than that. There is potentially more on the line for Milan because the general feeling is that Napoli have already won the Scudetto and so, you know, might be focusing on the Champions League. I'm going to say the fact that they've got Milan in the Champions League in that quarterfinal in a couple of weeks means that they'll want to go into that having beaten the Rossoneri at home and sort of laid down a marker.
Just quickly on that Champions League as well, Mark, is there real value, do you feel? Because I do at the moment that Napoli could go all the way.
Yeah, I expect them to reach the final. I expect I'm already putting them up to beat Milan in this game. I think that they will overcome them. And I don't see Inter or Benfica being good enough to cope with Napoli in the semis. So therefore, I mean, I think the value case is pretty easy to make. I would have, I suppose I've got much more in terms of reservations if they were to play against a Bayern Munich or a Manchester City in the final. I don't know if the way they play, you know, playing a similar style to Man City or Bayern, for instance, but they're with worse players, that might be an issue. But they're a great team to watch, absolutely. You know, would love to see them do it. And they're better than most teams, that's for sure.
Just a reminder then, Mark's treble suggestion, Bayern Munich, West Ham and Napoli. And finally, the nap for this weekend.
Yeah, it is. Well, the nap is Napoli. And if you have a look at their expected goal difference, it's like over per 90 minutes, it's 1.07. So that suggests that they're sort of more dominant even than Bayern Munich are in the Bundesliga and Paris Saint-Germain are in France. And then I look at Milan. They've lost recently 2-1 to Fiorentina. They drew 1-1 at home to Salernitana. And then before the international break, lost 3-1 at Udinese. I mean, that puts, I think, into perspective, really, that Tottenham defeat to them in the Champions League. This is not a good Milan side. And like the only problem is whether Napoli already think the league's won. But until it is over, I expect them to, you know, keep the blinkers on and do all they can to you know, wrap it up as quickly as they can.
Yeah, wouldn't disagree with you, Mark, at all. Napoli had flying high at the top of Serie A going into that big clash with Milan. And that just wraps up Bets Club this week. It's back to domestic action. Plenty to look forward to, as you say. Some huge games, not only in the EFL and in the Premier League, but also across Europe as well. Don't forget, of course, to rate, review and subscribe to Mark Langdon's Bets Club. And we'll be back next week with more betting suggestions for you.